from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next on Forum, actor B.D. Wong, perhaps best known for his roles in Law & Order SVU and the Jurassic Park film series, joins us to talk about his San Francisco upbringing, his acting career, and his current role in The Great Leap at the American Conservatory Theater. Then at 10:30, $5 million for a single-family home in San Francisco. That might not be so far off with predictions of rising housing costs, as 5,000 tech workers become millionaires this year if companies like Airbnb, Pinterest, and Slack go public. New York Times tech reporter Nellie Bowles joins us to talk about how a massive new round of wealth could affect the Bay Area. That's coming up after the news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Actor B.D. Wong has made his mark on both Broadway and Hollywood. He won a Tony for his role in the original M. Butterfly, and he's also appeared in big-budget films like Jurassic Park and Bird Box. His TV credits include Law & Order SVU, Mr. Robot, and American Horror Story, among many shows. And he's also an outspoken advocate for a greater diversity of roles for Asian American actors and for LGBTQ artists. And he'll join us this segment to talk about, well, his San Francisco upbringing, his acting career, and his current role in The Great Leap, which is at the American Conservatory Theater. Welcome back, B.D. Wong.
Thanks. It's great to be back. I really love talking on your show.
Well, love having you here, and also really appreciated your performance last night. I went to the opening, and you occupied that character. I mean that in almost a... Oh, supernatural sense.
Really?
Absolutely. And we'll talk about that. I want to talk about your, extraordinary performance.
Thank you.
I want to talk about that. So was Ari Gross's, by the way. I mean, and it was really a fine cast. Let's talk first, though, about your career and go backward. I mean, you really made your name with M. Butterfly, didn't you?
Well, I don't know why I hesitate. I feel like, what does that mean to make your name? Yes, I guess so. You know, I had been an actor up until that point. No, I hadn't done anything that anybody would know. And yes, that was the thing that people noticed, and it was in my entree into the whole other part of my career. So yeah, I guess that's what you call it.
You occupied that character too,
yeah.
The way I was implying or connoting. You grew up here in San Francisco, though, and a lot of people may not know that. Tell us about your upbringing.
I did, you know. I mean, that's one of the great things about returning to ACT and performing there is my connection to that theater. As a kid, I went there. As a young actor and a young aspiring actor, I was brought there by my drama teacher at Lincoln High School. We went on field trips to ACT all the time, and I grew to revere the whole idea of that company and that that organization by being a kid as an audience member. So coming back there and performing again is really very super meaningful to me. I grew up in the Sunset District. Our family house was on 40th and Ortega, and I never appreciated the beach until I came back as a grown up, because I never really understood how incredibly special it was to live there. What else can I say?
Well, you've come home again.
I have, yeah.
A son come home, as Ed Bolins once put it.
And Barry, thank you for reminding me. One of the big joys of coming home is performing in my hometown, because my mom really, really, really appreciates it, and
she must be bursting with pride.
She is. I mean, I think she has her own way of showing it, and it's really very wonderful. So I love doing this partly for her in some ways, to be part of the experience that she creates with all of our family and with all of her friends and stuff.
How did you become the shrink on Special Victims Union?
I had been working, I think, for a couple seasons on an HBO show. The first HBO series ever was called Oz, a show that was set
in a
prison. And they brought me in on SVU for a 4-episode arc to experiment with a character that might have been a new character. They had a new showrunner there who was introducing a doctor or a medical perspective into the show. Neil Baer, who was that showrunner, was a a physician himself and wanted to bring a medical perspective to the show. And so the part took, I guess, after the four episodes, they signed me on a contract. And I had just, my son was just born, and I wanted to stay in New York very badly. I didn't want to go to L.A. and you know, go back and forth and be bi-coastal and all that. And to get a contract on a solid New York hit show was really lucky for me.
How old is your son now?
Well, he's 18.
Colleges? We were talking about it the last hour.
Yes, I heard. Yes, he's going to NYU in the fall.
Oh, that's exciting. And when you, let me just ask you kind of an obvious question, but it's one that you probably are asked often. Do you prefer the stage to doing TV work or doing film work?
I think quite honestly, if I could make a living doing, working on the stage, I would, and I cannot. It's just not the way it works. I mean, the economics of it and all of that stuff. And I think the reason why is because the personal gratification that you get by being present when the audience is there is really great for me. The audience, you're never there when the audience is enjoying your work on a television show or a film. But you are actually in the same room that everyone that's watching the content is, and you get to appreciate and take pride in or enjoy their audible responses. And that's completely different from being in a movie or on television. The exposure that you get from the television and from the film work that you do, which is tied into the economic issue, is enormous. Of course, much more enormous than the theater work. And so there are kind of, you know, nice things about both all the mediums. I think people ask a little bit about this, and most recently I realized that it's a little bit like when you're texting someone and they say, you know, I don't want to text you, I want to talk to you on the phone, I'm going to call you, and you call them and then you have a real good conversation with them, because hearing their voice, whatever it is important that they wanted to say or convey to you, is more skillfully and more effectively conveyed in person.
Well, people complain all the time about texts where they're trying to be ironic or sarcastic and so forth,
and
people just don't get it.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
We're talking, by the way, with B.D. Wong. He is a Tony-winning actor. That's made a big difference in your life, too, hasn't it? You can always announce that he is a Tony winner.
Yes. These things that they tell, I don't remember who told me this, but from that moment on, you always have that kind of stuck to your name, and it's a good thing. It's good for your, I don't know, your
perception.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
And what drew you to this particular play? I mean, what made you decide? It's going to be at ACT, by the way, through March 31st, but to get involved in this, The Great Leap, economically, not necessarily the greatest lure.
Right, yeah. If you're going to take the hit, as it were, then you have to do it for something you really love. And I really love this play. I was first introduced to this play. I was asked to do the Atlantic Theater production in New York last year, and I did that production, a very small scaled down production, not scaled down, but scaled down compared to the one we have at ACT. And I loved the play. I just loved the experience of playing this particular character. I loved the audience's response to the play, which is incredibly enthusiastic. And when I heard that ACT was doing it in my hometown, I thought, I have to do it. And they asked me to do it simultaneously to me asking if I could do it. And I'm on contract with a television show, Mr. Robot, that shoots in New York. And that's really difficult to work out the dates and make sure that they can accommodate that. And we did do that. Mr. Robot was really great about it. And so I came to do it. And this experience is, in contrast, a very different creative experience. It's an 1,100-seat theater compared to a 99-seat theater. It has quite a well-appointed production. It's a beautiful production. The set and the projection work and the costumes and the lighting and sound are all kind of one mind, I think. And it's a beautiful production. So to do a very, very, very different production compared to the first one is a really good educational experience for me. I learned a lot from it, and collaborating with new people is on the same material is very interesting as well, and a rare thing. You don't ever get to have this kind of experience, so I grabbed it when I could.
Do you use any kind of method or Stanislavski technique? I mean, I said you occupy the character remarkably well, and that character is Chinese and is actually kind of a major figure in many ways in terms of some of the Chinese bureaucracy, or he's up there in the food chain at least.
Well, he's up there enough to have certain responsibilities, but he's low enough on the food chain to be at the beck and call of the party, right? So he's kind of stuck. But I kind of selectively do things that, you know, I'm not so fully immersed that I have to live and breathe the character at 24 hours a day. I don't find that interesting at all. But I do like to do things that can help me stay with it. You know, we have this, there is in the, no, I can't say that. It's a spoiler. I can't say it. It's a spoiler. But there are a couple of things that I have done in the play to really immerse myself and to kind of stick with it when I'm backstage rather than kind of go in and out of it.
That may be a spoiler, but it's also a tease for people who want to find out and they're curious about it. And by the way, if you're curious about talking to B.D. Wong, this is an excellent opportunity to join us, and we invite you to do that. I'm going to talk with him about, in fact, many things to talk with him about. He's been somewhat of a political activist in the LGBTQ movement, and he's certainly done a lot on behalf of getting Asian American actors or Asian actors generally into roles that are more for them, as opposed to, you know, somebody like the old Charlie Chan role or something along those lines. And we do invite you to join us. We'd like to hear your thoughts or any questions you might have. If you saw the opening last night, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Our toll-free number is available, and the number to call is 866-733-6786. You can call us now and join the program, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any questions or comments for B.D. Wong there at kqed.org/forum. Simply click on the segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, and people are asking me to ask you about your profile picture on Twitter of you meeting Obama.
Yes. Well, I'm very stubborn. I have had that picture up there for years, obviously, and I won't take it down. And it is a really nice picture of my mother and I meeting Obama at the White House. I was invited, incredibly unbelievable luck and honor to be invited to the state dinner that the Obamas hosted for the Chinese president and Hu Jintao. And it's a really hilarious story how I brought my mother to the White House with me, and we had this incredible adventure together for this trip, taking the Acela from New York to Washington D.C. and putting on tuxedo and going to meet the First Lady and the President. We got to the dinner, and then we were given our seating. And it was said, you know, we're going to table 23, which was great. And there was this long hallway with all these different rooms in it. And we're going, oh, where's table 23? And they're saying, oh, table 23 is the last room down the hall. We go down to the hall, and I'm going, there's a big painting of Abraham Lincoln. And I said, oh, our table's 23 is right in front of the painting of Abraham Lincoln. And we walk up to the table, and it's a table that seats like 12. And we look around at the place cards and, oh, yeah, Mom, you're right here next to Mayor Daley from Chicago. And we realize we're sitting at the Obama's table. I'm sitting across from Michelle Obama. My mom's sitting with Bill Clinton, Hillary, and I'm sitting next to Rosalind Carter. They put us with all the former presidents and the First Lady and President. And we just couldn't believe our luck and
May not have been luck. They may have thought, you know, this is a distinguished American actor of Chinese descent, and we'll put him with.
They did think that, and I'm grateful and wonderfully happy on mine and my mother's behalf because of that. Because it just lit my mother up like it was just the greatest experience to have as a son, I think.
And like I said, you made her proud. Obviously,
it was great. It was really, really great.
And we're going to bring some callers into this. Before I do, I should mention that the AC production of The Great Leap, which stars our guest, B.D. Wong, will be playing through March 31st. And it's also got a lot of local color to it. In fact, University of San Francisco plays a preeminent role in the plot of the story. It's written by Lauren Yee, who is a local play again, San Francisco born and raised, like our guest, and who actually I walked out yesterday at the end, and I was with Amy Tan and her husband, who were friends.
Right.
And I had the opportunity of introducing Amy Tan to Lauren Yee, which was kind of a nice thing for both of them, I think. Let me bring some callers aboard, and we go first to you. Don, you're on. Morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Wong. I'm looking forward to seeing the show on Sunday. I heard a lot of many good things about it.
Thanks.
I understand you received some tutoring in basketball dribbling from Frank Alaco at the University of San Francisco. Can you talk a little bit about how hard it was to learn that for the show?
Well, it wasn't hard. It was I was intimidated in the beginning because I'm not a basketball person. I was never a jock.
You should mention the play is about basketball.
The play's about basketball, yes. The play centers around a basketball game between a USF college team and a team in Beijing. And it's a kind of a big kind of cross-cultural meeting that climaxes the play. And as it were, the team is from USF. And here we are in San Francisco going right to USF to the gym that the play takes place in partially and meeting the longtime revered basketball coach of USF, Frank Alaco, who I thought, well, what is this guy, you know, going to know about us? Well, it turns out Frank is this incredible kind of theater fan and understands the theater and understands the mechanics of it and was able to incorporate his knowledge and affection for the theater in his coaching for us, which immediately made me much more comfortable because I thought, oh, this person kind of gets us. And he taught us fundamentals of basketball, right down, like as if we were kids, really, like dribbling and basic defense postures and how to shoot and all of that stuff.
So you're ready to join the Globetrotters?
I'm ready to go. Yes, absolutely. And anyway, he's a gentleman and a very classy kind of guy and very well regarded in his field. And so that was really great for us. And that speaks to an aspect of this production, which I think is really unique, which is Lauren writes a lot of her plays that take place in her hometown, San Francisco. And the references you'll never see this play more resonant than you will when it's done in San Francisco. The audience is all kind of united in this kind of affection for the locations and the references and the funny little things that she's infused into the play, and that's great. It's a very rare thing. I did the play in New York, and the play does not resonate the same way. People don't know what Mervyn's is in New York.
Looking at a comment from a listener named Marina, who says, "I love B.D. Wong's portrayal of a trans woman, White Rose, in Mr. Robot." And you're getting these kind of little fan notes here, which is always good.
Yes, thanks.
I'm also wondering, though, you know, you've, as I said, been very passionate about getting Asian Americans into roles to play Asian American parts or Asians to play Asian parts. We got a whole new, many people thought with Crazy Rich Asians, we had a whole new, I don't know, litmus test of getting Asian actors to play Asian roles and that they would be burgeoning and everything. I'm not sure it's happened yet. But what about the idea? Is it analogous to people who say trans people should be playing trans roles?
It is. It is absolutely analogous. And I agonized over kind of taking the part. And really, the part, the White Rose is a very enigmatic and kind of unique and kind of mythical and a little bit theatricalized kind of character. White Rose also has a really, really very heavy male identity. She's kind of a bi-gender kind of character. And I originally didn't know where the character was going at all. I considered her a trans woman at face value because that's the way she was described to me. And so I didn't really want to do it. I had, done cross-dressing work in my career before. I wasn't as interested in it. I was kind of skeptical about it. Sam Esmail, who's rather brilliant and is the creator of the show, explained to me the kind of uniqueness of this particular part. And I really wanted to do it very badly. I was very aware at the same time that this is a really great time for trans actors. Trans actors are on the map now as an actual thing. And in the way that Asian American actors were, you know, a few years ago, like, oh, is there really such a thing as an Asian actor? Yes, there's such a thing. They exist. You can find them. You have to go look for them. But they are there, and they're wonderful, and they can be quite brilliant. And so I was very aware of kind of robbing someone of that opportunity. And I made a choice, you know, and I made a choice with a kind of pledge that I would at least continue the dialogue about it because it's a real thing.
But you wanted the part, too. I mean, it's a great part, right?
Yes. And like I said before, you know, I am still at a stage where I'm needing to make a living. You know, I have to make choices based upon my own needs as well. Sometimes there are plenty of things that I can actually be very comfortable passing over. And I do that sometimes. I'm lucky enough to be able to do that. But this was something that I thought I could legitimately do, and I felt there was a side effect to it, but I also felt that there was a great opportunity for a dialogue.
And we'll go to another one of our callers. Grace has a question for you. Grace, join us. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yes,
you're welcome. I find your role as White Rose incredibly inspiring, the fact that you are a Chinese-American actor playing a transgender role, and you are so incredibly strong at it. And it's inspiring for me as a Chinese-American Asian, a woman who lives in San Francisco, your hometown. And my question for you is if someone in my midlife is trying to explore theater, what is your tip for getting started?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand fully. If someone is trying to explore what?
A career in theater.
Oh.
What would your tip be?
Just
for
career
getting
change
started?
Into acting. How do you break through?
Oh,
really?
Oh. Well, I'm not so sure about. Did you say career change into acting?
I think she did. Yeah.
I'm not so sure about career change. You know, when I started at the very basement. You know, discovering that I was an actor in high school, and so my track personally has been off from that point. As far as transitioning from in career wise to acting from something else, I would say it's a very different sensibility. In other words, there are things that come with it that don't come with regular kind of 9-to-5 jobs, and you have to be ready for that. It is not something you take lightly. It's something you can only do if you have to do it. If you feel that sense of not being fulfilled by not doing it, then you absolutely should do it. But if you don't feel that, and it's a rather arbitrary choice, I suggest people think of something else. It's very difficult. It's fraught with rejection. It is fraught with rejection for people of all colors.
And comes down to passion in terms of wanting to do it and needing to do it. I know so
yes.
many people who wanted to do it, loved it, and just couldn't get that breakthrough. That's maybe a discussion for another day. I hope we will come back. Quick question, though, from Caroline. B.D. Wong voiced General Shang in Mulan, who is claimed by some to be Disney's secret first bisexual character as he falls in love with Mulan when she was disguised as a man. Do you support that interpretation?
Why not? I mean, there is a kind of a sense of him being very confused about his feelings for Ping, and I think that's really wonderful. I love
that. We are out of time. Good to have you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.